It's time for another episode of Corner of the Galaxy from the Box, the show that gets you behind the scenes of the LA Galaxy and into the minds of soccer reporters and MLS experts. Your hosts for the day are Corner of the Galaxy's Josh Gessman and LA Times soccer reporter Kevin Baxter. Let's start the show.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Corner of the Galaxy from the Box on cornerofthegalaxy.com. Josh Gessman, Mr. Kevin Baxter with you after another LA Galaxy road win. I don't even know what to say or how to say it anymore. We're getting to the point right now where it seems like it's almost the roulette wheel, and it keeps coming up red, and it keeps coming up red, and you know that black is eventually going to fall. But it so far hasn't. The LA Galaxy get a 4-2 win over rivals San Jose in San Jose. Three road wins in a row. Obviously, we're going to talk about that game and any of the major issues that come up. But Kevin, first of all, how are you doing? Hanging in there?
Yeah, I remember somebody on this show, I think it was you, because it's only me and you, said one point out of those four road games,
yes.
You were off by eight and they still have a game to go.
Yeah, I think right now that they don't even send anybody to the DC United game. I think you send Kurt Arnolfo and maybe Chris Klein and no players, and that's it. You just let those guys fly out there and sit on the bench and forfeit the game and come back, because they've already gotten so many more points than I think anybody. Kevin, there's nobody in their right mind could have predicted 9 points from three games, right?
Never happened before. Actually, in three consecutive games. We'll get to that in a minute, but we'll talk about how this is historic, and it's something that even a Bruce Arena team has never done.
Yeah, it boggles the mind. I said on Twitter, I said, yeah, raise your hand if you said that the LA Galaxy would have 9 of 9 points after three of these road games. And I said everybody who raised their hand was a liar. And if you did predict that the LA Galaxy would get 9 or even 12 points, you were off your rocker at the time. It's simply easy to dismiss you, and I still question your sanity if you said that at the start of this road trip, because the LA Galaxy looked maybe a little more on the upswing. Obviously, the second half in Chicago is sort of that turning point that everybody seems to be pointing to. Maybe perhaps the injury to Jermaine Jones is something that everybody's pointed to. Yeah, I know. Couldn't possibly be, right, Kevin? Do you have the stat of how many goals they've scored since Jermaine Jones has left? I want to say it's 11.
Well, let's see. I can just look at the games. When he went out in Chicago, they had not scored. So
right.
He got two in that game.
Right.
Four in the Red Bulls game, correct?
Let's see. Four in the Red Bulls. Was it four? Was it that many? See, this is one of those things. We're going to have to. Now we have to go back, and we're going to go look at it. Okay, here we go. We had two. So they scored two in the Chicago game. They scored three against the Red Bulls, so that's five, right? They scored two more, which is seven, and seven and four. So two against Minnesota and four against San Jose. So that is 11 goals since Jermaine Jones has exited the field because of injury, which, not saying there's a cause and effect here, just simply pointing out a stat, Kevin.
Well, they have 19 goals on the season, so that's seven before with Jermaine Jones in the field, and you said 12 without?
Or 11 without.
11.
Yeah.
11 and 8.
Yeah, that's a lot. That's a lot. I mean, it just, again, not saying cause and effect, but I think a lot of people are drawing that line, that correlation, even with, you know, you sort of have to look at the turnaround with Joao Pedro for me and how much better he's been playing ever since Jermaine Jones went out. And I think he's had a string of successful games here, which sort of culminates in this San Jose game where I thought he was very good. He finally got his first goal, which I'm sure he was getting a little worried there. He's pinged so many crossbars and posts that I think maybe he thought one was never going to go in, but he gets his first goal. The LA Galaxy get a 4-2 road win, and I said the Galaxy ran over San Jose, and people have certainly pointed to the stats in this game, Kevin, and said that San Jose dominated in a lot of categories except for the score. And when you were there watching that game, I was there. I was in the press box. I watched this game at Avaya from beginning to end. I will tell you right now that the LA Galaxy dominated where they needed to dominate and when they needed to dominate, and that's why this 4-2 win is sort of more indicative of a rolling over of San Jose for me than it is maybe getting lucky or anything else, because I certainly didn't think, I thought maybe two or three shots were real dangerous by San Jose, and other than that, they were shooting things that never had a chance of going in. So that's sort of where I sit, at least on this game. What'd you think, Kevin?
Well, again, Brian Rowe made some really good saves. That one at the end of the game on Wondolowski, I mean, the game was essentially decided, but that was a fantastic save. You know, he just continues to play really well. I'm surprised they were able to score two goals on him. You know, you talk about them dominating all the perhaps all the other stats, but you know, they award the league titles based on wins, and that's, you know, that's what the Galaxy got. They got a win. And, you know, I think you can read quite a bit into João Pedro's performance since Jermaine Jones went down. I had the impression that Jermaine Jones was just making João Pedro, making his life miserable. I don't know why the chemistry wasn't there. I don't know where that came from. But you could tell João Pedro just did not feel comfortable, and he had a string of horrible performances. I mean, you and I a month ago here were talking about, you know, maybe they should sit him down and they right. should play Bajo Husidic instead. And now João Pedro is playing really, really well. And the midfield is very productive all of a sudden. And balls are going through the midfield. That's the link to the front line. And Giovanni Dos Santos, who, by the way, has now scored five goals in the last four games. That's the most in MLS. There's two other players. Nikolic from the Fire and Almiron from Atlanta have also scored five goals in the last four games. But and yes, I know some of those have come on penalty kicks, but still. So Jermaine Jones goes out against the in the second half against the Fire. There's four games since then, since he went out. Giovanni has five goals. I mean, yeah, you can look at that and say what a coincidence. But man, you know, after a while, you kind of look and say, what has changed over that period? And there's really one substantial change, yep. And that's losing Jermaine Jones in the midfield, and things seem to click since then.
Yeah, and it also, it totally is about team chemistry for me as well. You look at what Yelavan Dom was sort of able to do in terms of he gets sit, he comes back, and he really has been, again, one of the leaders on the team that you expected him to be. And so that's an important part of this as well, because I thought he had a fairly good game outside of some early marking issues, but even that can sort of come through. But you look at how the goals were scored. Chris Wondolowski gets the first goal. The LA Galaxy allow a goal. The first goal, again, it sort of seemed like maybe this was something that would sort of plague them and would see an end to this winning streak. But you get João Pedro scoring in the 19th minute. You get Giovanni Dos Santos, who gets a penalty kick or converts a penalty kick off of a good Bradley Diallo play. I know there's a lot of people who are on Bradley Diallo. And for me, Kevin, he has been the best right back option the LA Galaxy have had. And he has a problem with trying not to get yellow cards. I mean, that certainly seems like a guy who's going to get yellow cards every single time. And he got two in the game previous, two games previous to this, because he was suspended for the last game. But you see him come in here and he draws a penalty kick. He has some flash and some stability there at right back that we haven't seen for the Galaxy. And he drew that penalty kick. And yes, it was a penalty kick. And he did everything a defender is supposed to do in that particular case, even if that means embellishing the contact a little bit. There was more than enough contact there to draw that PK. So I've been pleasantly surprised by Bradley Diallo, and I think Cardinolfo is a big fan of his as well. Spent a lot of time with Bradley Diallo down at LA Galaxy 2, and then Diallo had an injury last year, so you had to he had to work past that. And now that he's back, he's providing a very good, solid base now at that right back position. Maybe not so much panic back there, although the injuries to this LA Galaxy team continue to mount for me. And so that's going to be sort of a question as we go forward. But back to the goals, you had Giovanni Dos Santos in the 35th minute. Then you had Husin score in the 37th minute for San Jose. Kevin, you're getting barked at already. I can tell.
Yes, I am.
No problems. You had Husin score there. And then Victor Bernardes scores the own goal. And then Giovanni Dos Santos with the sort of game killer, the perfect counterattack goal that was beautiful. It was striking. It was a lot of work by Ashley Cole, some great work by Roman Alessandrini, and just it was Giovanni Dos Santos and his ability to match the speed of the cross and put it right where nobody could get it. It was the most beautiful goal I think the Galaxy have scored so far in 2017, 64th minute, and that was it, folks. 64 minutes into this game, the LA Galaxy winning 4-2, and really, like I said, they were dominating where it counted, and that was on the scoreboard. San Jose was having to do way too much to try to overcome what the LA Galaxy were able to do when they got the ball and when they wanted to attack.
Well, a couple of things. You know, you mentioned the score. Obviously, we're talking about goals. That's the four goals are the most they've scored in a game since actually didn't score four there. It's the most they've scored. I'm looking down the score list here. Oh, I'm going back quite a bit before I find. It looks like the last time they scored at least four goals was in May of 2016.
Okay.
So that's been quite some time. They did score four goals against Orlando. on 9/11, actually.
Yep.
But you know, a couple things. You talk about the own goals, and I'm the, probably the first one to step up and say, you know, an own goal, kind of a cheap goal. But when you think about it, the Galaxy have own goals in each of the last two games.
Yes.
They put the other team under pressure in Minnesota and San Jose, and forced a defender to make a decision that didn't go well for his team. And so, you get a point for that goal, and maybe the Galaxy deserved that because they put that team under pressure and forced them to make that mistake. And the same thing with Diallo getting the penalty kick. You're putting the defense under pressure and forcing them to do things they don't want to do. So, you know, that's a legitimate score. I don't want to cheapen it, as I've tended to do in the past a little bit. I mean, when you think about it, like I said, they put the team under pressure, they made a mistake, and it led to a goal. And I know that there was a lot of dissatisfaction on this show, probably, but certainly in the stands with Kurt Anofo before the Galaxy went on this road trip. And I'm not about to say he's, you know, God's gift to soccer strategy, but
right. You
know what? They've won three in a row on the road. João Pedro's playing very well. Yella Van Damme, who wouldn't come out and sit with his team in the second half of that Chicago game after Anofo pulled him, now is a model citizen. And the guy, you know, the famous photos now, you've seen them all over the Galaxy social media, Yella Van Damme showing the crest, playing for the shirt. Yella Van Damme is a different player since he's been sat down. And, you know, we both heard veteran players say that. And Kurt Anofo say, too, that second half against Chicago, things started to click. Whatever Kurt Anofo said in the dressing room during that halftime speech and the moves, I think, that he made with Yella Van Damme and some of the other strategic things that he did, the teams definitely responded. And sometimes it's not all X's and O's. Sometimes you draw up the X's and O's and the players don't execute for a variety of reasons. But when, as you said, the chemistry, when you get them on the same page, all of a sudden the X's and O's line up. And, same Kurt Anofo. Different team last four games.
Well, I'll give you an X and O example that Kurt Anofo gave us after the game. So he was talking to the reporters after the game and talking about Ramon Alessandrini and sort of the combination between Ramon and Giovanni Dos Santos and how that partnership is still beginning to develop and how it's really starting to show something for those two players who are I think they like playing with each other. I think they're starting to understand each other and that's sort of working. But if you notice, Ramon Alessandrini was on the left-hand side. For that goal, for the fourth goal that the LA Galaxy scored. And Kurt Anofo said that at halftime he had talked to Ramon and he said, hey, you should come on play on the left-hand side in the second half. He goes, I think you're going to have some more room. He goes, I think we can get sort of another counterattack goal. I think we can get something out of you being on the left-hand side, combining with Ashley and being able to find Giovanni Dos Santos. And who are sort of the guys who combine on that left-hand side is Ashley, Ramon Alessandrini, and of course, Giovanni Dos Santos. So that, you know, again, I'm with you, Kevin. He was certainly on the hot seat. I believe that to the core. I believe that if he would be 0-3 right now, he would possibly be looking at a game in DC United where if he didn't win or didn't get a result and didn't have things, that he may not be the coach of the LA Galaxy coming back whenever they face Houston on June 17th. So all those things were true at the time. But looking what he's been able to do, looking how this team has sort of rallied around each other, and they're never going to admit it, Kevin, but you and I know that there was some real dissatisfaction with Anofo, the way he was coaching from the players, and sort of how those players were combining with him. So if you look at all those things and what he's been able to do these last three games, and you see how the players are playing for him again, it's a turnaround. It's a turnaround that's very, very important to the LA Galaxy. And I'm not saying it doesn't all go south again, but for right now, he has that team, and that team likes him, and this team likes playing with each other, and this team thinks that they can win any game that they're currently being played in, which is certainly not the team that drew 0-0 with the Philadelphia Union.
Well, and let's talk about your two star players. Alessandrini, he's the only player in the league. He's got 6 goals and 6 assists. He's the only player in MLS that ranks in the top 11 in both of those categories. And then, if you go back, the last four games are actually starting in the second half against Chicago, since we've sort of drawn the line there. Alessandrini and Gio together have scored 7 goals and had 5 assists in 3.5 games. I don't know of any other duo in MLS that's really going to come close to that. That's pretty phenomenal. And again, I think it's another instance of the chemistry in the midfield getting better and allowing the midfielders to bring the ball up in the case of João Pedro, and then getting to Alessandrini, bring the ball up and set up Giovanni Dos Santos. And, you know, next thing we need to do is, or the Galaxy needs to do is get Giassi's artist involved in this. Everyone's having a party, and he hasn't been invited yet.
Yeah, well, he's been invited. He's just been standing in the corner, not participating in any of the fun party games.
He needs to get on the dance floor.
He needs to do something. He needs to get out there and do something because, again, I mean, if you're going to look, and there's lots of players to sort of highlight here. I thought Dos Santos had a great game. I thought Alessandrini had a great game. João Pedro played well in the center. And a guy who struggled in the first probably 20 minutes was Rafa Garcia. And I thought Rafa Garcia had a great rest of the game after the first 20 minutes. So he had 70 minutes, basically, of really good soccer and really found himself in that game. Because for a while there in the first half, San Jose was running right through the middle, right through Pedro, right through Rafa Garcia, and Garcia was sort of playing that back role. So he's playing a little bit behind João Pedro, and so he's sort of the guy that has to stop those things, and that was not happening. And San Jose was certainly performing well in that first half and really putting the pressure on the Galaxy. But Rafa Garcia, I think, had a really good game, and I think it was important for him to struggle and then to see him sort of rebound from that, and that was good. I will put Yelav on Dom in terms of him having a good game as well, even though I think he had some marking issues at the beginning. But he came in, and he had a couple great passes, and some passes, too. Giassi Zardes that absolutely went nowhere. I joked on Twitter, but I'm only half joking. A rule that hasn't been implemented since Michael Stevens was on the club, which was don't pass the ball to Michael Stevens because that's where offense goes to die. Right now, that's Giassi Zardes. Don't pass the ball to Giassi Zardes, which is tough to say, Kevin, about your number nine guy, your striker, who is supposed to be this other guy who's going to be dangerous. He had another poor game, and this is a poor game and a string of poor games. Giassi Zardes doesn't look like he's as fast as he used to be because there was a ball, certainly in the second half, that he could have chased down that he didn't get to in time. He doesn't look like he has any confidence whatsoever. He's not getting the shots. He's not getting goals. Even when he does get the ball and passes, there was one occasion where he kept the play alive that eventually led to an LA Galaxy goal. So if you want to be super, I don't want to be super critical and not notice that whenever he does well, that we're not going to say he does well. On that particular play, he did well. But outside of that play, you couldn't even point him out on the field to most people because he just wasn't involved. And if that's an LA Galaxy fault in terms of their positioning, Kevin, then they need to fix that. But I don't think that's what it is. I think that this is a guy who just, he does not have what he had previously, and I don't know if it comes back.
Well, let's hear some numbers. He played 90 minutes against San Jose, played 90 minutes against Minnesota. Neither game did he get so much as a shot. Played 90 minutes against the Red Bulls, had one shot, and it was on goal. He's had two shots on goal in the last six games, and this is the guy who's supposed to be your striker.
Yes, this is that is absolutely true. That is the guy who's supposed to be your striker. He's the dangerous one, all right? He's the one who's supposed to be opening up space for Giovanni Dos Santos and for Roman Alessandrini. And right now, those two guys, they're opening up their own space. Giassi Zardes isn't helping. This is a big red flag. You're talking about LA Galaxy and needs going into the transfer window. I think that's what everybody sort of always wants us to focus on, Kevin. Where are the LA Galaxy going to place their eggs? Which basket are they going to be putting them in? Lots of people say right back, and I'm going to say right now, the way things are, I understand there's no depth back there, but it would be tough for me to spend a lot of money on a right back whenever I know that I have a supposed number nine that isn't doing the job that you expected him to do in 2017. That's tough for the LA Galaxy to pass up on a striker if they can bring in somebody, whether that's a big name, whether that's a name they can fit under the salary cap, however they can do it. They need some reinforcements there because really there hasn't been a whole bunch of scoring from any of the strikers the LA Galaxy have tried, and Giassi Zardes has been given and deservedly so, the lion's share of that of those attempts. And Kevin, it hasn't come off at all, not even once.
I'm going to push back a little bit on that and say that if I'm signing a big name guy, well, not a big name guy.
Okay.
I mean, I think we can agree that Alessandrini was not necessarily a big name guy. He's become one. But I think we all scratched our heads a little bit when they signed him. We had to go look him up on Google and find out who he was. He's a top-class player in France. But he wasn't a Gerard or Giovanni Dos Santos names that we recognized immediately. I would go for – I think that the central midfield needs a lot of help. Even when Sebastian Lletget comes back, he's going to play wide. I'm not sure that Rafa Garcia – I think Rafa Garcia is a good short-term answer. I don't know if he's a long-term answer. I think Jao needs some help. And I think we've proven the last 3.5 games, and unless there's something happening that you and I don't see, and especially in my case, that's probably likely. But Jermaine Jones is not going to be the answer when he comes back. I don't see Jao Pedro manning that position by himself. So maybe central midfield, you know, maybe that Gerard guy will come back. But that's where I would look. I would look central midfield. And the other reason I would do that is because up front you have McInerney, who's there, who's serviceable, but I think is a one-year rental. And then if you really buy into the Galaxy's argument that they want to play these academy guys and the young guys and that's their future, that means that that position right now is ticketed for Jack McBean. So why go out and spend money on a designated player who most of those guys come in and need 2 to 3 year contracts? You know, by that time, McBean's, quite a bit older and he needs that playing time now. So I would go to central midfield. I think that's where the biggest need is right at this point. You're right. Jesse's artist is not getting it done, but I do think you have a couple options on the bench. I don't see any options at central midfield right now.
Yeah, no, I agree with you on that. I still think they're going to have to go in and bring somebody in from the central midfield. I just don't know if you're going to put all your eggs in one basket. If you're going for a longer-term solution, do you go longer-term in central midfield? Somebody who's going to pair perfectly with Joao Pedro because he's your long-term option right now. So do you figure that out? Which I think there's a reasonable argument you do, but I still think you need to go out and get somebody in that striker role and somebody who can prove themselves. I agree. I think that the Galaxy should be playing more guys like Jack McInerney and Jack McBean, but right now you have a homegrown player who you pay a lot of money to, in Giassi's artist, a former / current U.S. men's national team member. He certainly hasn't regained the form in order to get called back. No LA Galaxy players put on the U.S. men's national team roster right now. Giassi's artist, obviously not playing well with his form. And then you also had Sebastian Legette, who's injured, and Jermaine Jones, who was injured. So you can understand why those guys weren't obviously named onto that U.S. men's national team preliminary rosters, all that stuff. So that all makes sense. I have no problems with that, but you're right. The two biggest holes the LA Galaxy have right now are in central midfield because they've gone through, I don't know, 30 or 40 central midfielders, it feels like, with all the injuries. And then your striker position. Those are sort of your things. So where are you going to fill it in? Ari Lassiter scored a goal for LA Galaxy 2 over the weekend. Is he an answer? Is he somebody who's going to come up and see some time now that he does that? It's just the Galaxy have not seen a lot out of Giassi Zardes, Kevin. And just as we did with Joao Pedro, asking the question, when does bad performance after bad performance mean that you have to sit somebody on the bench? And for me, that time is quickly approaching for Giassi Zardes. I don't know if he needs to go down to LA Galaxy 2 and get some goals under his belt and feel like he's the man again and he can boss some people around, then send him to USL and make that happen. Because right now, the stuff that he's doing is not helping the team. We talked about, I think, Kevin, you and I made a comparison about Giovanni Dos Santos, and sometimes whenever he wasn't showing up, it felt like the LA Galaxy were only playing with 10 guys. That's how it feels with Giassi Zardes right now. It feels like the Galaxy are playing with 10 guys. And that's not something you can have happen from a guy like Giassi Zardes.
No, you know, you mentioned the national team. I guess we on the show should never ask a question we don't have the answer to, but when's the last time a national team was called up without a Galaxy player on it? I mean, they had four in camp in January.
Yes.
And now Giassi's not there. Jermaine Jones is hurt. Sebastian's hurt, and Brian Rowe didn't get called up. So
right.
Four in January, two on the for the World Cup qualifiers, and none this time. It's been a while.
Yeah, and it used to be Landon Donovan was the easy go-to. He's always going to be on the national team. Of course, until he wasn't anymore. So, yeah, I mean, there's some interesting things going on. And listen, I think it's probably a bonus right now for how hard these LA Galaxy players have had to work on the road, because traveling on the road isn't easy. I don't care if it's San Jose or if it's New York or if it's Minnesota. Traveling on the road is a pain. All right. And these guys, I'm telling you right now, don't appreciate having to be gone every weekend. All right. They want to be home. And so what's going to happen when they do come home? I think that right now, being that they're going to get a little bit of a national team break as we go into World Cup qualifiers and the international break coming up, I think that's good for everybody involved with the LA Galaxy to not have to play a game here in the upcoming weeks, sort of between DC United and whenever they face Houston on June 17th. So that's sort of a good thing going forward. But we mentioned injuries, Kevin. We still have more injuries for the LA Galaxy. Daniel Starris came out of this game with an injury. Alessandrini was limping after the game and could possibly have an injury. Emmanuel Boateng was limping during the game and came out. So all these things sort of come up. But I mean, you know, we have we have Daniel Starez, I think, is sort of the real focus here.
Well, yeah, I asked the Galaxy today if I could get an injury update. The injury happened Saturday. Today is Monday when we're recording this. And the Galaxy, surprisingly enough, said they did not have an update. We know that Mike Trout is going on the DL less than 24 hours after he gets hurt.
Right.
He's had an X-ray and an MRI, and he's on the DL. And the Galaxy says, Daniel Starez is hurt? Well, who knew about that?
Yeah,
So no official update on Daniel Starez. I will say that you talk about the road trip. Yes, I know they fly in planes. They don't take covered wagons, and they sleep in nice hotels. But the travel does impact this, and the travel impacts that because it takes a couple of days. It takes you away from home for a couple of days. It makes you sleep in strange beds and eat food that you didn't cook yourself. But it's also the time, you know, rather than you train and you get on the and drive to the airport and get on a plane and fly, you don't go home and recuperate and rest. Those of us who fly regularly know that it is taxing. You think not, you're just sitting there reading or watching TV or maybe sleeping, but it is physically taxing. And when you have a niggling little injury, it's something that makes it difficult to heal. And it looks like it may be with Daniel Starez, and you may know more. It looks like it may be a hamstring. My experience with hamstrings, having covered athletes with hamstring issues, is it's one of the worst things you can get because it feels like it's better and you go out and play and you may play well for a game or even two games, and then all of a sudden it grabs again. It seems like a hamstring injury does not go away until the off season. And in soccer, the off season is very, very short. And if you call it for a national team, there's no off season at all. So this could be, if this indeed is a hamstring and it is serious, this could be something that is nagging at Daniel Starez for the rest of the season.
Yeah, Daniel Starez came out in the 43rd minute just before halftime. Dave Romney went in his place. I have no official update. We talked to Kurt Anolfo after the game. We did ask him about it. He said that he really didn't have any update. It was a right hamstring. They'd have to take a look at it and sort of evaluate it beforehand. I also talked to Daniel Starez as he was limping out of the San Jose locker room complex there. And I asked Dan how he was feeling and how the leg was, and he gave me the look and said, we're just going to have to wait and see. He was limping. You could definitely tell it was bothering him. He went out to go see the Special Olympics team, walked out there and walked back. So, you know, in terms of how much pain he was in, I'm not sure it was anything super duper over the top there. He wasn't in a wheelchair, none of that stuff. But it looks like it's a hamstring injury, and we're just going to have to wait and see. For Dan's part, I would say that the expression on his face, and if I'm allowed to infer from that expression, is I don't think that he thinks it's something that's just going to go away real quickly. I think he knows that he pulled something in. It looked like that just from the way that he went down behind the play as well. Another guy who was injured, or who at least was limping in the locker room heavily after the game, was Roman Alessandrini. He spoke to reporters afterwards, kind of saying he doesn't care if he gets fined. The referee isn't calling fouls. He's getting killed, and he can show you the bruises on his legs to sort of look at that. I will tell you, he was limping almost worse than Daniel Starez, but this seemed like it was more of a after a battle type of limp there, Kevin. I think he'll recover. He may need an extra day without playing some soccer. He's going to have to ice him down, but I think it was more bumps and bruises than anything major. So Alessandrini right now, I think he'll be fine. And then you had Emmanuel Boateng also came out of this game. Boateng came out after a tackle. He may have hurt something, but for the most part, Cardinolfo said it looked like it was just a knock and that it wasn't anything that was actually wrong. And so, you know, again, I think that he'll be fine as well. So there's two guys on that list that will probably be fine and no problems. Daniel Starez, though, I would not expect him to travel to DC United right now, especially with that hamstring. I don't think he recovers that fast, and I think you can expect Dave Romney or somebody else to fill into that center back role and pair with Yelle Van Dam. So that'll be interesting to see how that goes. Again, the LA Galaxy have their final away game of this four-game road trip. This is a chance to get 12 out of 12 points, win four road games in a row. Saturday, June 3rd, 2017, 4 p.m. Pacific time. The game is being broadcast on Spectrum Sportsnet and Spectrum Deportes. So take a look for that on Saturday. Well, so
let me say a couple of things about that, about the injuries. First of all, you know, I think you're right about Starez. Unless it's 100% or 110% healed when they start training tomorrow, I think he stays home, and I'm going to go back to the travel thing, not to make too big a deal of it. But do you really want the guy sitting on a plane for 5 hours, getting out and playing an MLS game, and then getting back on that plane hot and flying back if he has any kind of an injury at all? We've still got 2/3 of the season to go. So I agree with you. Unless he's 110%, I think he stays home. And remember, João Pedro came out of the Minnesota game with a cramp. he cramped when it's 50 degrees. So I'm not sure that's one of those not being hydrated and it's too hot cramp. I think that's maybe something that deserves a little bit more attention. And then, you know, let's go back. We started the season without Ashley Cole and Giassi Zardes out with injuries. Never got Robbie Rogers back, out with injury. Sebastian Legette, Jermaine Jones, out with injury. Now the Galaxy could lose Daniel Sturrus to an injury. Boateng's limping. You know, you talk about Alessandrini, and the one thing with Alessandrini, you can look at this and say, is this part of the Giassi Zardes effect? And the fact that opponents look at the team now and say, okay, well, you know, they are playing with 10 men. Giassi Zardes hasn't had a shot in two games. We're gonna bang on Alessandrini and bang on Giovanni Dos Santos, who may be a little quicker and may be able to get away from some of that. But in the midfield, where Alessandrini hangs out, it's a little bit more difficult, I think. So, you know, with teams not having to pay attention to Giassi's artist, can they now center on Romain Alessandrini? And it's you know, kind of pound on him a little bit. I want to get to some numbers on the road things, though, because
yeah,
you talked
about
that a little bit. We tweeted some of this out over the weekend. Last time the Galaxy won three road games in a row was May of 2010. That's three road games in a row away from the StubHub Center, not counting the Chivas USA game.
Right.
The last time they won three road games in consecutive games, and by that I mean there was no home game in between. If you look at the MLS schedule, a lot of it is home, road, 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 home. You rarely get three games in a row. Although in looking through this thing, the Galaxy seem to have lengthy road trips of three or more games about once every two seasons. So that's been 10 or 12 times they've had an opportunity to do something like they're doing now, and I've never accomplished. So anyway, last time they won three road games in consecutive games was 2007. They beat Kansas City, Columbus, and Houston. The last time they had three road wins in 1 month, which they've done this year, that was – I have that as May of 2010 as well. But here's where they're going to make – here's where they have a chance to make history. They can win four road games in consecutive games for the first time ever. They have won four road games in a row. That was also in May of 2010. They beat Colorado, Seattle, Dallas, and Columbus. But they've never won four road games in consecutive games. In other words, no breaks in between, no international break, no home games. Four road games in consecutive games. They've never done that. Been around since 1996. Never did it under Bruce Arena. Never did it under Ziggy Schmidt. Never did it in any of the years they won MLS Cups. If they can beat DC United, who have been struggling a little bit, if they can do that, they will do that. It'll be the first time in Galaxy history that a team has won four times in consecutive road games.
Yeah, it's interesting. If we want to go to the stats that I've been keeping track of in terms of the LA Galaxy, their points and how those points match up to their previous seasons, I will tell you that in the last 10 seasons, actually, I can do it all time. How about this? The LA Galaxy are now equal with the 2014 season, all right, and the 2002 season. So those are the two teams that both had 17 points through 12 games, all right? That means that the LA Galaxy are now better than or equal to 10 previous seasons. So we talk about the LA Galaxy and the number of seasons that they've played since 1996, and you look at that, they are now better than 10 of those previous seasons, better or equal to 10 of those previous seasons. So in terms of, remember, the LA Galaxy off to their worst start in a decade since through nine games, right, when they had 8 points. Well, they now have 17 points through 12 games and now sit, I'm going to say this, very average among where you look in terms of the pack for LA Galaxy seasons throughout the years. And I also say this, that the 2014 team was no slouch in terms of where they ended up in seasons, in terms of how many points they have ended up over the years. So that's an impressive sort of look at the LA Galaxy and where they sit right now. That 2014 team, Kevin, finished with 61 points. All right, that's not a little bit of points. All right, so the way that they've grown, and certainly if you look at the graphs and you go to cornerofthegalaxy.com, you can see the updated charts there. If you look at it, you can see how steep the rise is. Obviously, you win three games in a row, Kevin, that's going to have some advantages to you. But you can sort of see the grouping and where the LA Galaxy sit. I also want to comment, again, go back to Jermaine Jones, because we talked about him. Somebody asked Kurt Arnolfo about Jermaine Jones and when they thought he might be back. And Kurt Arnolfo said, you know, it's still sort of day-to-day in terms of where he's going to be. He could be back, and this was, I believe I'm getting this quote correctly because I'm doing it off memory, but to paraphrase, he said he could be back for DC Or maybe it might be Houston. So I think you and I have always theorized that there's no way he'll come back for DC, that he'll come back and probably be ready, if he's ready, for a Houston game, because it gives him an extra week off, and then it also makes sure that he doesn't have to travel with any of that injury as well.
Well, you know, I'm looking at we talk about them trying to make history. They need a win in DC to do that. DC United has played four games in the month of May, three of them at home. They lost all three. Those were three in consecutive weeks. So they're 0-3 at home. They did not score a goal in those three games. They did not score against Montreal, Philadelphia, and Chicago. Those are three teams the Galaxy have played already. And so, you know, the Galaxy beat Montreal, played Philadelphia to a scoreless tie, and played Chicago to a draw. So three games at home in the month of May, did not score a goal. We outscored 6-0. This weekend they played in Vancouver. They won that game 1-0, their first and only win of the month. They have a game midweek in Orlando. So they're going Vancouver back to D.C., D.C. to Orlando, back home. They'll get home about the time the Galaxy land in Washington, D.C. So no advantage for the home team as far as that goes. And then they have to play their third game in 8 days, or it's third game in 7 days against the Galaxy in a place where they haven't scored, much less won, in a month. So advantage Galaxy, it seems.
Well, it's a clash of streaks going on, so we'll see how that... This is the type of stuff that Vegas likes. I mentioned the roulette wheel sort of spinning, and it keeps coming up red, Kevin. Eventually, it's going to come up black, right? They can't win every game from here on out, so where are you going to sort of sit whenever they go to DC United? It's a very long trip. We talked about their success on the East Coast before they somehow beat the New York Red Bulls, a very bad Red Bull team at the time, a Red Bull team that they beat. They're now going back to DC United. I gave them a chance of getting 1 point, or, you know, maybe I no, let's face it. I gave them a chance of getting 1 point out of this road trip. And right now they will be playing for 12 points. I'll say this as well. That DC United game that they won over Vancouver, if you're worried about them taking any sort of momentum from that, Kevin, they got it off of a dive and a flop that was so horrendous. There's no possible way the disciplinary committee doesn't suspend the player who made it. There was nobody within a yard and a half or 2 yards of him when he flopped into the box for a penalty kick. And I don't think you need to tell anybody, especially not Dave Romney, about how the disciplinary committee looks on flops inside the box.
No, and you know, that's just another sort of another brick in the wall, right, for DC United, if now they have to play at home where they've been struggling without a player that's kind of key to them. So
yeah, it's going to be interesting. We talked about it. I mean, when we've touched a little bit about it, but I mean, are we taking anything from this, Kevin? Can you place the LA Galaxy as a quote unquote fixed team? If they were broken before this, they're playing differently. You can see it. The attitudes are different. You can hear it just by talking to the players or listening to what they're saying. So all of these things have come about to be a positive turn for the LA Galaxy, but is this team fixed?
You know, I don't know, but this run could continue for a while, even if they're not fixed, because we talked about how much DC United is struggling at home. So, you know, that could possibly be a win, or at least a draw. Then they come home, play Houston Dynamo, who have not won on the road this season. Then they get Colorado, the worst team in the league. They really don't play a top class opponent again until June 24th when they get Sporting Kansas City, and that's at home. So this run could go on for a little while. I look at the Galaxy and I still see a lot of flaws, mainly because I don't see a lot of depth. I don't see a lot of opportunity for Kurtanoff to go to his bench and change the momentum in a game. You know, I thought he could do that last year, or Bruce Arena could do that last year with Mike McGee, who played one way, and then Alan Gordon was just so terrific on both sides of the ball and played so well in the air, you could change the way you attacked. I don't see much of that on the bench. And with the spate of injuries, and Kurtanoff will keep saying, you know, injuries are part of it. But not this many injuries. This is a bloodbath. And it's taking its toll. They're playing guys that were supposed to provide that depth off the bench. Now they've been forced to play as starters. So this team to me does not look like a full team. It does not look like a dangerous team. They're playing very well. And a lot of times the best teams are the ones that play over their heads. And I'm not saying that the Galaxy is doing that necessarily. They played some really good games and they deserve the victories, but can they keep it going for the whole season? I thought this Galaxy team coming into the season, I thought they would make the playoffs. Mainly because if you have a pulse, you tend to make the playoffs in MLS. Right. It's very difficult not to make the playoffs. I thought they would make the playoffs, but there was no way they were going to compete for, you know, the Shield. They weren't going to compete for the best record. But if all that's true, if the Galaxy are going to be a Midland team and make the playoffs, look at this run that they just went on. You can't discount them. I don't care what happens the rest of the season. To go on this kind of a run that they've gone on, that, you know, again, the playoffs are many months away. I mean, we're getting ahead of ourselves here, but anything's possible with this team. And we saw that with Seattle last year and Portland the year before. Just get into the playoffs and then see what happens. And I think this Galaxy team makes the playoffs, but I don't think they're a complete team. And I think they have a lot of holes that even maybe a midseason acquisition can't fix. But, you know, in streaks, they can play very well, and maybe that's all they need to do.
Yeah, you can get streaky and do a lot of damage in Major League Soccer. I'll tell you right now, the LA Galaxy sit above the red line, above the red playoff line for the first time in 2017. They are in sixth place in the Western Conference, all right, just behind the Portland Timbers, who have 18 points. Here's the interesting thing, though. I'm going to give you both some positives here, and then I'm going to switch it to the negatives. So the positive side of this is that the LA Galaxy, in points per game, sit fourth in the Western Conference, all right? FC Dallas has the best points per game total right now, 1.67. Sporting Kansas City has 1.57. Houston Dynamo have 1.54. All right, and then it's the LA Galaxy at 1.42. The main reason for all of this is, if you look at FC Dallas and the LA Galaxy, they've only played 12 games, while some teams have played 14 games, like Sporting Kansas City, or 13 games, like Houston and Portland. So the 12 games is the low in the Western Conference. Only in the Eastern Conference do you have Montreal, I think, who's played 11 games and no more than that. So that's sort of the positive there. The LA Galaxy, in terms of points per game, which is something that you're going to want to pay attention to eventually, sit in fourth place in the Western Conference, which is better than, and I, you know, I don't have need to tell you and do this, which is better than a lot of teams in that conference. So they're playing well, and clearly the 4-2-0 away record, which I believe is the best in Major League Soccer. Again, I'll have to go down and actually do the math again, but it looks like nobody else has four. And yeah, Toronto FC is 3-1-3, so that would be 9-3. It's, I think they might be tied right now for the sort of the best road record as it goes. So 4-2-0 for the LA Galaxy, more wins than anybody else has in Major League Soccer. So those are my positives, Kevin. All right.
Well, let me throw another theory out there.
Yes.
You know, as we've talked about on this podcast right here, you know, Gio has just taken off. He's been one of the hottest players in MLS over the last 4 weeks. 3 weeks ago, he was chosen by Juan Carlos Osorio to be on the Mexican national team, or at least to be on the preliminary roster for the World Cup qualifiers and the Confederations Cup. And since then, that's when he's really taken off. I wonder if that's an inspiration, in addition to the change in chemistry with Jermaine Jones going down. I wonder if Giovanni's been inspired by that a little bit. You know, he did, with two goals on Saturday, he outscored the entire Mexican national team, which lost 2-1 to Croatia at the Coliseum on the same night. So there is that. I mean, he's certainly getting the attention of officials with the Mexican national team, and that's kind of long been where Giovanni's interest is. I wonder how much that's played into this.
Well, it's interesting. I want to go back to that Mexico game. Javier Hernandez Chicharito became, I think, the all-time most scoring Mexican national team.
47 goals.
Yeah, 47 goals. I talked to ESPN FC's Jeff Carlisle while I was up in San Jose, and Jeff Carlisle had the story about LAFC pretty much going to be passing on Javier Hernandez Chicharito there because of the salary constraints that it looks like that Chicharito is going to want. All right, and so it says basically that LAFC thinks it's too expensive and they're not going to pay it. So I think Jeff had that, it was going to be $10 million in terms of a $10 million a year. But whenever I talked to him, he told me, he goes, it's way north of $10 million a year. I thought maybe the LA Galaxy might get involved in this because I know the deep pockets at AEG. If you wanted somebody like Chicharito, and if LAFC is bailing out, what a better way to sort of gain some brownie points from both supporters and sort of from the city of Los Angeles than to go out and get the guy who the crosstown rival says was too expensive, right? It's like, oh, well, you guys can't afford him? Oh, we can. No problems. We're going to go ahead.
Here's a couple of things on that. The Galaxy have made several public statements now, whether it's smoke and mirrors or truth, that they have money to spend, and they have a lot of money to spend. They talked about, back when they were allegedly chasing Ibrahimovic, that they had made an offer to a European player, when we believed it to be him, that would have been a record for MLS salary. And we know the record is Kaká, $7.1 million. So it was north of that. I was led to believe it was maybe as much as double that. So that would certainly be in the Chicharito range. The problem with Chicharito right now, though, is he still is under contract to Leverkusen, and so there would have to be a transfer fee paid. And that could be quite pricey. That could be as pricey as the contract itself. And that could be the problem. And you know, whoever signs him may wait until after the next Bundesliga season when Chicharito could be had on a free transfer, or perhaps Leverkusen would let him go just to get out of the contract. A lot of that remains to be seen. Chicharito apparently also has some other offers in Europe and may want to stay in Europe through the World Cup. Coming to MLS and playing part of the season and then going away for the World Cup may not be the way he wants to prepare for that. But having said all that, you're absolutely right. I saw Jeff's story last week, and I found it very interesting that LAFC, that the team with the 26 owners, with Will Ferrell and Mandalay Entertainment and all these big money people, would all of a sudden find a player like Chicharito, the foundation of their franchise, the first player they signed, would all of a sudden find him to be too expensive. That was very revealing, and told me a little bit about LAFC, and also told me a little bit about what Chicharito's looking for, because to me that seems like a deal that should be made. Chicharito should definitely be in LA, and if not with LAFC, with the Galaxy.
Well, Jeff was theorizing with me. I said, is it posturing? Could this be just Chicharito trying to drive the price up as much as he possibly can, which is always the answer is always yes in that particular case. But yes, that is something that could be, but also that perhaps Chicharito doesn't want to come to Los Angeles or Major League Soccer. And maybe if that's the case, then he doesn't need that money, and he's not worried about it, and he wants to play in Europe. I think your sort of assessment there, Kevin, of him possibly coming after a World Cup and doing all that is spot on, and I think Jeff had the same sort of idea on this. So, I mean, that's sort of where you sit in terms of if you want him, if the LA Galaxy even think that that is a guy who they could bring in and could have success for the LA Galaxy. I just think that in terms of the LAFC, LA Galaxy sort of rivalry, quote unquote rivalry, because there's no team yet on one side, it would be interesting to see the Galaxy sort of go in and take the guy who LAFC said he was too expensive for us. And if that's the case, you'd have to look at it from sort of the PR side of things. That's a win for the LA Galaxy, saying, oh, well, we have the pockets for this. We've been around for a while. You could start to crow a little. You could stick out your chest a little bit at that one. I don't think it's going to happen, but it's just something that's sort of interesting as we go down the road.
Well, let's not let this get away just yet, because Thierry Henry, when he came over after the World Cup in 2010, played for France in the World Cup, and then came to MLS, finished the season in Europe to prepare for the World Cup. Chicharito did the same thing in 2010, signed with Manchester United before the World Cup, but didn't start to play for them until after the World Cup. And I think that would be the smart strategy for everybody. Chicharito stays in Europe, plays in the Bundesliga, gets fit for the World Cup, plays in the World Cup, and then comes to MLS after that, if indeed he comes. You're right, there's a lot of reasons for the Galaxy to want to get him, and I think primary among those is the fact that they would be taking him away from LAFC, and I know a lot of listeners on this show are not LAFC fans, but from the LAFC perspective, and you have to look at it from their side too, this is the guy who you're going to build the franchise around. The Galaxy did not start. They started with a lot of other players. They didn't get Landon Donovan for a while and David Beckham. LAFC is trying to build a reputation and build a foundation. And this would be the one guy, I think, given the makeup of Los Angeles and given this guy's stature in Los Angeles, more Chicharito jerseys were sold in LA during the last World Cup than any player in the world, more than Messi, more than anybody. So he's very popular here. He could, if he were to come to LA for either the Galaxy or LAFC, he could challenge Clayton Kershaw and Blake Griffin and be the most popular athlete in Los Angeles. So there's a lot to be said for that. I think this is a signing LAFC needs to sort of stake their brand on. And if the Galaxy were able to take that away from them, that's a double win. Forget what he does on the field, which would probably be considerable. That would be a huge, huge feather in their cap if they could keep him away from LAFC.
Yeah, I don't always love sort of the pandering to a specific community. I know a lot of fans would rather the LA Galaxy get the best person for the best job, but you can't tell me the off-the-field marketing doesn't also influence what on the field can happen. And so with Chicharito and again, the LAFC tie-in and how that goes, I'm just saying, Kevin, it might be one of those that you would look at if you're the LA Galaxy in terms of if you had the money, if you could do it, then you could certainly go out and pull. There would be a little bit of a coup in this one, so it was something to do.
And he is a good player. I mean, let's face it. You know, Ronaldo's not coming. Messi's not coming. Neymar's not coming. Christian Bale's not coming. Looks like Ibrahimovic is not coming now. You know, you can go down the list. You don't have to go down all that far until you find Chicharito. Again, the leading goal scorer in the history of the Mexican national team. He's had some great seasons, played a lot of Champions League games over there in Europe, played for top teams, Real Madrid, played for Leverkusen now, played for Manchester United. He's legit. So you look at it and say, yeah, you know, there is a marketing element to that, definitely a huge marketing element to that. But the guy can get it done on the field too, and he's 29 years old right now, so it would be a great sign if they could pull it off.
Well, it'll be interesting. Listen, there's going to be lots of rumors before the LA Galaxy actually land somebody. I do believe they're going after somebody in this window. So this is the window that matters right now in terms of having a quote-unquote DP spot open. They don't technically have a DP spot open. Stop telling people that the LA Galaxy have a DP spot open. They can make one available whenever they buy Daniela Van Dam from TAM, and that will give them a DP spot open. But next time one of your friends says, well, the LA Galaxy have a DP, just slap them on the back of the head. All right? Say, no, not yet.
Steven Gerrard.
That's right. That's how it goes. They're going to bring him back. That's going to be perfect. All right. So that's it. I wanted to go over some of the negatives that I thought in terms of the streak that the LA Galaxy have been on whenever we got a little sidetracked there. But just in terms, Kevin, I'm not a huge stats person. You know this. The entirety of my stats is basically comparing LA Galaxy point totals to previous years, and that's sort of where I like to sit. I like to look at possession. I like to look at shots on goal because sometimes that matters and sometimes it doesn't. And I'm a guy who likes to look at numbers and then correlate those with what I see on the field, and then that makes me feel either good or bad about the stat. That's sort of how I work. But I will tell you this, and people have been pointing it out, that if you are a fan of statistics and soccer, and you know what XG is, which is the expected goals number, all right, the LA Galaxy in their last three games have far surpassed the expected number of goals they were supposed to score, all right? This is the fun with stats, and I won't get into the minutiae of it. But the LA Galaxy, that basically means that, one, they've been getting a little lucky, which I certainly think if you look at the own goals, that could be something from it. And it takes away even the penalty kicks, so don't even look at the penalty kicks that have been scored. These are just the goals that were scored from either a set piece or run of play, excluding penalty kicks. But the LA Galaxy have been outscoring their expected goals number. What that means is, again, that there's been a little bit of luck. Usually, teams tend to regress either back or they progress up to their expected goals number through the entirety of the season. Now, that can be okay because a lot of times it can mean that, hey, your expected goals are one or two goals, Kevin, and then you just don't let the other team score at all. And so you could be back at zero or one or two expected goals and be winning games. It's just a matter of looking at the streak in terms of what it means and what have we seen from the LA Galaxy. What I've seen is a team that has really, really come together in the last three games. And so I don't care that expected goals number is off right now. In fact, in terms of my explanation, I would also expect that number to start moving up or trending up so that the LA Galaxy could then fall back a little bit and hit that number. So, you know, for what good statistics do and what they do, it gives you a little bit of pause about what you've seen in the last three games. And plus, you add that, Kevin, to the fact that most MLS teams struggle on the road and that the LA Galaxy have won three road games in a row. There's some fun with numbers going on here, and so there's a little pause here. But I will tell you this. If the LA Galaxy come back and play against Houston and do not play well against Houston at home, there's going to be a lot of questions still raised about this team, because if you can't perform at home in front of your home fans, it's going to be a difficult season for you.
Well, but the home fans have not, or the home environment, I want to say, I'm not going to call out the fans. The home environment was not conducive to good performances by the Galaxy at the beginning. I mean, let's face it, the last game there was, there was booing in one game. I think the Philadelphia game there was booing. There were the fire, and awful signs. And I think the team felt in the last couple of games anyways like there was a little bit of a siege mentality and maybe deserved. I'm not being critical. I'm just being factual. And maybe that was deserved and maybe that had part of it. You know, what you talk about, though, is in baseball, it's always everyone plays to the numbers on the back of their baseball card, meaning by the end of the season, everything sort of goes to where it's supposed to go and it's supposed to even out.
Right.
But sometimes it doesn't.
Right.
You know, you look at a lot of teams that just get on these runs. Again, Seattle, 20 points after 20 games, they're done. They wind up winning the MLS Cup. So it is possible. You're right, though. I mean, I think what for me, what it comes down to is I think the Galaxy are playing over their heads. They're outperforming what they should be doing, but they're doing it. This is not smoke and mirrors. There haven't been poor referee calls. There haven't been, there's been a couple of own goals, but we talked about that. There hasn't been any, you know, super lucky decisions that shouldn't have happened, that kind of stuff. It hasn't been fluky. There hasn't been smoke and mirrors. They've won these games legitimately. And you talk about people said San Jose outplayed them. Hey, you know what? They won by 2 goals.
Yep.
They scored 4 times. You know, I on one hand, I want to say to fans, enjoy it while you can. We don't know how long it will last because I do think this team is flawed. But at the same token, they've done it. I mean, it hasn't been lucky. And who's to say that this team can't perform at this level for the rest of the season? I'll say that I doubt it, but they've done it 3 weeks in a row now. It hasn't been one fluke game, and they've done it on 3 road games on both coasts.
Yeah, it's been impressive. It's been fun to watch. It was fun to cover. I had a great time up in San Jose. I enjoy going to Avaya Stadium. For me and the press box experience that you get from it, it is very nice, and they do a good job there, and they were very welcoming to me, so I want to thank them up in San Jose. I know that fans may think a little differently, and certainly there's reasons to think that, and that's fine, but again, they were very nice to me, and I appreciated them giving me a spot to cover the game, and it was nice talking to all the LA Galaxy players after the game as well. So all that stuff went well for me, and I'm glad that I was able to go up there and do a little away game coverage, which is always a little more fun, a little different, a little change in schedule and how things normally happen. And plus, Kevin, with the LA Galaxy not playing until June 17th, I knew that there was no possible way I could go that long without seeing an LA Galaxy game in person. So it was the perfect sort of chance for me to get that gun. And if you're keeping track, by the way, still 19 days. We're recording on Monday, May 29th. All right, still 19 days until the LA Galaxy will play another home game against the Houston Dynamo.
So, oh, by the way, another stat. You talked about how they hadn't won in New York and on the East Coast in like 100 years. And, and what was that, their first or second win in Northern California since 2013?
That's their second in 14 games. And that is their first win ever at Avaya Stadium.
So, in their second game.
Yeah, it's only the second game. Remember, every time the LA Galaxy go up there to play a game, San Jose wants to move it out of that venue and into like somewhere else. All right, so that's sort of the thing. And you'll see that because I think July 1st, is it, Kevin, when they play San Jose
Stanford
again?
Stanford Stadium.
Yeah, at Stanford Stadium. Again, moved out of Avaya. And for those of you watching on TV at home, there were empty seats there, although I think they said that it was a sellout. So,
Well, okay, I have to say, though, having covered games there before, that bar on the airport side, the north side of the stadium, is supposedly the largest outdoor bar in the United States. A lot of fans spend time there and at the food trucks. And I've heard San Jose people talk about that, the criticism they get around the country that their games don't sell out. Why are there all those empty seats? They do sell out. Everyone's standing in line to get a beer. So whether or not that's true, that's the excuse. Let me say something really quick, though.
Yep.
I was really, really saddened to hear about what happened with the fans and in the parking lot. You know, I hope Galaxy supporters that go back on July 1st are safe. I would urge them to be cautious, but I hope that they don't sink to the level of the San Jose people, because that's inexcusable. You know, you go to a game, you want to take your family, maybe just go alone. You want to go have a good time. You want to cheer for your team. But I mean, the whole idea of this tribal mentality that, you know, that American sports fans have always kind of laughed at, when you see moats built around stadiums in South America, or, you know, the huge police presence in Russia and places in Europe, and now it's starting to happen here, and it was really saddening to me. And I think back to those Giant fan or Dodger fans that beat the Giant fan in the parking lot at Dodger Stadium several years ago. I don't know if they ever expected that guy to wind up in a coma and now in a wheelchair for the rest of his life. But you know what? No one remembers the score of that game, or even how that season came out. I mean, it's just not worth it. Go to the game, have a good time. You know, I'm sorry that some of the San Jose fans decided to do that, but I know that Galaxy supporters are better than that, and I'm sure they're going to show that on July 1st, and then when San Jose comes down here on the 27th. There's just no excuse for that. And the last note I'll say, I remember that the year that fan got beaten up at Dodger Stadium, and I covered the World Series that year, and it was in St. Louis, and I saw a Texas Ranger fan wearing a jersey, a Texas Ranger jersey, in the stadium, and I asked him how he was received by the St. Louis people. And he said fans came over to him, looked at his tickets, showed him to a seat. One guy helped him get a beer. He said they couldn't have been nicer. The game started. Everyone cheered for their team. And afterwards, everyone shook hands and went home. And that's the way it should be. And I don't understand why people have to, get so tribal about this. It's just a game.
Yeah, and I'll add to that as well that, I don't think there's any place for it. I'm all for, giving somebody a hard time or, having fun with it whenever they're in the stands. I know that there's a lot of passion between the two fan groups and between the two supporters groups and each other, and I want you to support your team, and I'm glad that the Galaxy supporters that got to travel up were able to see a win away, which is always fun. But I know there are too many people that I saw that didn't necessarily sit with the supporters groups that were in some of the other areas. They got verbally harassed and with homophobic remarks, by the way, for some reason. Mentioning Robbie Rogers for some reason. And that's just, it's so far over the line and so ridiculous that it sort of boggles the mind for me. So anyway, stay classy, I guess is sort of our message or our hope for the rest of these. Enjoy the rivalries because, quite honestly, I don't think that there's anything better in the world than some of the amazing soccer rivalries. But all of that can be enjoyed without any of the violence or any of the ridiculous things that some people say. Have fun with it.
Yeah, San Jose should be embarrassed. And like I said, I know Galaxy supporters are better than that. And the great thing about Galaxy supporters is I like the way they police themselves as well. And I have total confidence in the supporter groups out there to make sure that it doesn't happen with their people. And that's why the Galaxy are the best organization in Major League Soccer, frankly, or at least have been the best team and the best fans.
Yeah, it's certainly one of those reasons. All right. Anything else, Kevin, you want to get to before we get out of here?
No, I think that'll do it.
All right.
I'm off the soapbox. Let me step down. I hope I don't twist an ankle here.
No problems. All right. The LA Galaxy face off against DC United. Again, fourth game of their four-game road trip on June 3rd, 2017, 4 p.m. That is a game broadcast on Spectrum Sportsnet and Spectrum Deportes against DC United. So it's one of those that you're going to want to watch. Or if you're traveling, safe travels all the way across the country. Probably the last game ever for the LA Galaxy at RFK Stadium. At least I'm keeping my fingers crossed. Somebody said, hey, make sure you get a piece of the stadium to remember it. And they said, somebody was saying, say, hey, if you broke something off. And I said, at RFK, you don't have to break anything off. You just have to pick it up off the ground because it's been falling apart for quite some time. But RFK Stadium, perhaps the so long goodbye game for the LA Galaxy and DC United on June 3rd. All right. If you're looking for Mr. Kevin Baxter on Twitter, it's at KBaxter11. And please go to the LA Times, where you can find all of his writing, and he writes about soccer and everything else in between. A great article about Giassi's artists there that you're going to want to check out. Go to LA Times and type in Kevin Baxter, and you can find all the stuff that he writes right there. If you're looking for me on Twitter, it's at Jay Guessman, JGUESMAN, and of course at Galaxy Podcast on Twitter. I'm behind that 99.9% of the time as well. Head on over to cornerofthegalaxy.com for all of our game coverage, recaps, previews, all the charts, all the notes, all our podcasts, everything's right there at cornerofthegalaxy.com. All right, good game coming up this weekend. We'll have a live show on Thursday night, so make sure you stick around for that. For Mr. Kevin Baxter, I'm Josh Guessman, and you've been listening to Corner of the Galaxy from the Box on cornerofthegalaxy.com. You've been listening to the Corner of the Galaxy from the Box podcast on cornerofthegalaxy.com. You can follow the show on Twitter and Instagram at Galaxy Podcast. And be sure to check out and subscribe to iTunes, Stitcher, and Facebook by searching for Corner of the Galaxy. And for all of your independent LA Galaxy news, discussion, and entertainment, including this podcast, head on over to cornerofthegalaxy.com. Fans, thanks for listening. We ask that you be kind and courteous to your neighbors as you leave the podcast. We thank you for joining us and look forward to seeing you again. Until then, I'm Michael Araujo, and on behalf of the entire Corner of the Galaxy crew, goodbye, everybody.